Thanks so much for having me. I feel like hopefully I'll have an opportunity to talk about FDA's role in trying to prevent 5.6 million children from ever becoming addicted to tobacco products. That's what I'm here to talk about today. But also the recognition and acknowledgement that everybody in this room plays a part, and that at the federal level, we can certainly do a whole lot, but the efforts at the local level really cannot, we can't talk about how really important they are to changing things dynamically on a street-by-street basis. So I really applaud your work. Hopefully, collaboratively, both federal, state, local efforts will be the ones that actually make a difference on this. So as you mentioned, and I thought it was really quite eloquent, I think one of the biggest problems that we face as a society, if you think about it, somewhere I heard once that it's a world of competing sorrows, and all you have to do is watch the news to understand that there are so many issues that tug at our hearts, that cause concern, that really people can stand behind. And so when you ask the average American about tobacco and tobacco control, most of them think the problem is solved, and they can basically go driving down the road because they think that, you know, the years of tobacco control, which have done such amazing things, it's like, think about the laws that you've changed at the state and local level, and as you have basically ensured that advertising of tobacco products isn't on TV, and the laws of everything from smoking in the workplace to youth access, all of those effective programs have really caused the societal norm to change. And as the societal norm has changed, tobacco rates and smoking are now at the lowest levels for both adults and teens ever. And that's really because of the work of the people in this room. And so when you ask the average American, is tobacco still a problem? The answer is, no, I don't really think it's a problem anymore. But we would have to know that that's not the truth, because really the problem is anything far but solved. And from our perspective, it's like there's tremendous things and tremendous progress that still needs to be made. So as part of that, we know that it's the leading cause of preventable death and disease in America, and I think that that falls on deaf ears. Oftentimes people just simply do not understand that that is the truth. But yet there's 42 million addicted smokers, and the reason why there's 42 million addicted smokers is that the nicotine does not really allow them to walk a different path, because they are basically so addicted and so dependent on the product that they know will kill them. But yet, if you talk to smokers, and we've talked to probably thousands of them at this point in time, there's really a love-hate relationship as it comes to tobacco, because when you pick up the habit and at the age of 15 or so, and you do this action, by the time you're 35, you will have done this action a million times. And so oftentimes, if you think about that, there's probably not one other thing that you have done in your life from the ages of 15 to 35 a million times. And oftentimes, you know, you're not just smoking by yourself, you're smoking with your peers. And so to think of giving up smoking, if you even want to attempt to make another successful quit attempt, you have to really give up a part of yourself, and oftentimes you have to give up your friends and family too. So it's a huge issue to overcome due to the addiction. But yet that's why we lead to almost 500,000 deaths a year. And those are the people that have basically passed on, but there's still over 8 million who are suffering with really horrific diseases. And the toxicity of the product really kind of enforces that. So really, what's to be done when this is something that's completely preventable? You know, do I believe that we have a hope of absolutely solving this problem? Absolutely. I think the people in this room understand that, you know, before the Center for Tobacco Products came into being, really it was very much an unregulated marketplace, and it's the only unregulated marketplace for consumer consumption. And so the tobacco industry could basically bring any product that they wanted to market and test market in any way they wanted. They could make any claims about the product that they wanted. It would go basically unsubstantiated. They could add any chemical or ingredient or additive to the product that they wanted without really anybody standing in its place. But yet nobody, including the American consumer, doctors, public health advocates, as well as the federal government, really understood or even knows what's in these products. CTP was created basically 5 years ago by a bipartisan Congress, and we were signed into law by the president in 2009. But I have to be honest with you, that really set FDA back, because for the first time in FDA's history, we were overseeing a deadly product. And for those of you who are familiar with FDA, we were established in 1906, and basically we have a safety and efficacy standard so that we could ensure that everything that consumers put in or on their body will be safe and effective when used as intended. Well, as the people in this room know, tobacco products kill half the people that use them. And so this was an entirely new paradigm for FDA, because it took the gold standard agency for safety and efficacy and put us in the business of regulating a product that we knew was deadly. Right now, FDA currently has the opportunity to oversee cigarettes and cigarette tobacco, roll your own, smokeless. And something that's really important to mention is that we had to develop, as under the law, the Tobacco Control Act, our own public health standard, and it's very different than FDA's safety and efficacy standard, because what we have to look at is the end result of all of our policy actions and what those will do to both users and non-users alike. So we have a population-based health standard, and so we have to try to ascertain, you know, with the actions that we take, how many new people will be brought into the market, how many people will leave the market, so that we can understand the net health effect, because we have to have enough assurance that the policies we put in place will create positive change through a net public health standard. So again, my point here is that it's very different, and I know that a lot of people, and I've certainly talked to a lot of you today, that are frustrated with FDA, with how long things take. But I would say to you that, you know, certainly we can own that and we understand that, but it's this product that we're regulating is diametrically different than everything else we're doing. So we've had to establish whole new rules and policies and guidances around how to even do that, which is very different for FDA. So everything we do is really threefold to improve public health. So one of the things that we have often talked about, one of the most powerful tools in the Tobacco Control Act, is our ability to establish product standards. And by this, we will be able to tell the industry that they have to make their product less toxic by how much and by what ingredients, to make them less addictive and are less appealing. So we are very, very well aware of the toxicity and addictiveness and the appeal, especially as your presentation so rightly pointed out, when it comes to vulnerable populations. And so we have the ability to put product standards in place. And if any of you have heard our director speak, you know, we are working on product standards, but it just takes time. Really the area that is more the Office of Communications purview is through our communications efforts to encourage adults to quit using tobacco products and then prevent youth initiation, which is really what I'm here to talk about today. So, but I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge that there are very new threats on the marketplace, because as you all know, the marketplace is wild and rapidly evolving with all these new and novel products. So we do not yet have authority over things like ENDS, or hookah, or cigars and cigarillos, but it does not mean that we are not worried about it. And you know, I've gotten several questions today about the deeming rule, and the deeming rule has now been sent to OMB for the final departmental clearance. And so, once that is established, we will have authority of these products, because it is not lost on us what is happening with youth tobacco use, and it's really a shame, because all of the efforts of all of the people in this room has done an amazing job of driving down the smoking rate for teens especially. It's at the lowest level in years, basically 40 or 50 years, I think. But the problem is, when you look at the escalation and increased usage in the last 3 years alone of e-cigarettes and hookah, you will see that the increase in that has completely offset the decrease in smoking, so that in the last 3 years, overall tobacco use is level, and that's terrible. It's obviously a huge problem and a huge concern, and I promise you that we have our eyes on that as well. So really, where FDA and the Office of Communications and what I'm talking about today, where we come into this, is convincing teens to not use tobacco. And But what I can say is, I've been doing this for a long time, advertising, that changing the way that kids think and act towards a specific product is absolutely the hardest thing to do. I have two teenagers. I don't know if any of you guys have teenagers, but sometimes it's really hard to impress upon teens when you don't want them to do something and the reasons why. And so it's not as simple as telling a teen, oh, this is dangerous for you or this is not healthy for you, because those type of messages fall on deaf ears. And, you know, in social marketing, really using a 30-second TV spot or radio or print or an out-of-home ad or social media platforms to convince someone not to do something is really, really challenging. But we've got this thing with addiction, because you guys know probably better than I do that it's as little as one or two cigarettes, and the addiction and the feelings of cravings can already start to begin. And when 90% of all adult smokers picked up a cigarette and tried their first cigarette before they were 18, you'll understand why we feel like it is so urgent for us to interrupt and disrupt the behavior of experimenters before they become addicted daily smokers. One of the things that we've had to do to really understand how to craft messaging is to take a look at the entire marketplace. There's roughly 25 million teenagers in the U.S. Those are between the ages of 12 and 17. And as near as we can tell, basically 40% of them, or roughly 10 million, are those that we would categorize as inherently at risk. So these are kids who are basically one party away from picking up their first cigarette and trying their first cigarette, or already experimenting but haven't yet, experimenting more socially on the weekends with friends, but haven't yet become daily addicted smokers. And part of the reason why they're using these products is a picture has emerged over the last couple of decades that we're trying to reach a very different audience. And you had mentioned those most vulnerable, those most underserved, and that's exactly the kid that we're trying to reach. Because when I was working on the initial truth campaign in the late 90s and the early 2000s, the kids who were using cigarettes at that time were really the popular in crowd, and other kids were following and emulating them and watching what they do. And so Truth went after a very different mindset with a very different message. But fast forward now, we're mid 2015, and the picture that's emerged of who these kids are is they're the most probably marginalized in our society. They come from lower socioeconomic homes. They don't have a lot of opportunity from a school standpoint, because oftentimes their schools aren't high-achieving schools. These kids, while we know the social norm is not to use tobacco products, for them, it's their social norm, because their families, their mom or their dad or their brothers or sisters or their cousins or their friends, they're basically surrounded by smokers. And so for them, it's a way of life. And they're oftentimes really at risk, these high sensation seeking kids. And so they're turning to things like tobacco and marijuana and drugs and drinking as a way to cope because of their really stressful lives. So much so that nearly 600 are becoming daily smokers. So the picture has emerged, and we hope that we have developed campaigns that really kind of break through their barriers and have a way of reaching them where they are, to help them understand the dangers of the product without preaching to them. Two of the biggest misperceptions that we're trying to overcome is that these kids that we're trying to reach do not believe that they're smokers. They don't call themselves smokers, but yet they'll walk into a research focus group with a pack in their back pocket. They believe that they will never get addicted, or if you talk to them and help them understand about addiction, then they think they can quit at any time. But we know that that's statistically not true, that 3 out of 4 kids who think they will quit in 5 years are still, unfortunately, using tobacco products. And they don't believe that the long-term consequences will ever apply to them. Again, in their mindset, they're not smokers. So they will never run the risk of getting cancer. They will never run the risk of having emphysema. They will never run the risk of having a stroke, because they're just simply not going to be using the product that long. So they completely underestimate the power of addiction, how fast they will get addicted, and how hard it will be for them to quit. And so, again, that's what makes our job so urgent. So our goal with all of our public education efforts is to reduce the number of youth smokers, so that maybe 10 years from now, we won't be facing 5.6 million youth who, if nothing happens and if no interventions happen, then they're on their way to a lifetime of addiction. So we're really giving it everything we have, and we're trying to make teens hyper-conscious of the real cost of every cigarette through what we consider to be very breakthrough, fresh portrayals of the health and addiction risks of tobacco. So we're finding new ways to talk about the health consequences. We're disrupting their belief about addiction by stressing loss of control. This is one of the most important things to kids who feel so out of control and stressed by their life. They want to believe that they can control something. And so when we help them see that addiction to cigarettes is giving up control to an unwanted outside force that you don't want to be controlled by, it literally flips a switch in their head and they understand it better. And we're also challenging their assumptions with new facts about the toxicity of the product, so that with each and every ad we put in the market, they will be better well-equipped to understand the cost to their body, the cost to their mind, and the cost of smoking even just one cigarette. So I think that this system was not set up with sound, so I'm not going to show you the commercials. If you guys have, if you haven't seen them and you're interested, you can go to therealcost.gov and look at all of our advertising, and I can certainly answer questions afterwards, but I apologize, this system wasn't set up for sound, and I'm also trying to bring it in 15 minutes, so I think I can do that. So our advertising has been in market for 18 months, and we have basically a very comprehensive media buy. So we've been spending roughly $85 million each year continuously, so there's never a time of the year when the messages are not in market. So our goal is to be where the teens are with all of their media options. And so we have a very complex and sophisticated mix of online and offline media following their main passion points. So the at-risk kids we're trying to reach love specific types of music, so we're on those music channels. They love snarky comedy like Adult Swim, so we are there with South Park and some of the other, I won't even mention to the parents in this room. Extreme sports. Our kids are very much, as I said, they're high sensation seeking. And so, ultimate cage fighting and boxing are things that really interest this audience. Fashion for the girls, we're not forgetting the girls. And girls, no matter how rich they are still very interested in fashion and what others are wearing. And gaming, girls and guys alike love the gaming programs. And so we are absolutely reaching all of our kids through these different opportunities for messaging. So from in terms of effectiveness, we set a goal of reaching 75% of teens, and I'm really happy to say that our media plan, we know that we are effectively reaching over 90% of teens with 20 different messages each quarter. So that is a very, very high dosage that they're receiving these messages. Importantly, over 9 million unique visitors have come to the website from all 50 states. And one of the things I'm most proud of is the fact that we've had over 2 million conversations with youth on our social media platforms where they will question us, they will ask us more. We didn't specifically develop any content in our advertising that has a cessation message because going in we believed that kids just wouldn't want to hear about cessation because they're not smokers and they don't need to quit. But we've had great conversations with kids online who will say, I now realize that I am addicted and where do I go for help? And so we are working with NCI and Smoke Free Teens and sending a lot of kids there for help. But importantly, we're shaping and changing their attitudes and their behaviors. So we'll hear things like, I always thought smoking was foul and killed people. The only difference is now I understand how. Or I used to think it made people look cool until I saw my own teeth getting yellow and I got sores on my gums all the time. Or, one young person who said they're struggling to breathe and it's been happening for a while and they've tried to stop, but it's a really hard addiction to get over. So, we know that. We know that emotionally. We know that rationally. But to hear the kids now coming to us and asking for help has been a huge signal to us that we're heading in the right direction. So for such a time as this, it's the first time in my history that there have been three well-funded, dynamic, unique tobacco control public education campaigns. You've got our efforts, you've got the CDC TIPS campaign, you've got the Truth Initiative, it just changed from Legacy Foundation, the Truth Initiative's Finish It campaign. And these campaigns are basically providing the state and local teams air cover, if you will. It's like hopefully, as we're pounding home the messages about addiction and loss of control and the 7,000 toxic chemicals in each cigarette, hopefully it's giving you guys the opportunity to create a dialogue wherever you need it to be, whether it's in the doctor's office or whether it's in you know, the town hall. So I guess my point there is that there are many partners working alongside you on this problem, and now you've got the federal efforts hopefully strengthening and providing support for your local efforts. But if anything, you know, for those of you guys who have been working in tobacco control for a lot longer than me, absolutely no one can go in alone, and I think you need the concerted efforts at the state, the local, and the federal level, because the local boots on the ground are critical, and hopefully you will see, or hopefully you feel that, at least in the public education efforts, what we're providing you is a launch pad or a sounding board to wage whatever it is that you're trying to wage in your local markets. But you can do it in a way that we can't, because at the federal level, we can't personally touch people, but you guys can personally touch people. So the degree possible, we're hoping to equip you with what you need to do that, because you guys are the real champions for health on a one-to-one basis. And then finally, I would say, watch what FDA does or what we don't do. There's oftentimes reasons for why we can't take a specific action or we can't take it in the time frame that you would like us to take it. But that doesn't mean that you don't have a role in helping to fill in that gap. So if you don't see us tackling a major pressing issue, there's probably a reason for it, but there's still an opportunity for you guys to kind of wade in where we are not yet. And just to realize that our collective work isn't done, despite all the fabulous and amazing work that's happened. It's like, you know, we're playing a game of whack-a-mole, as you said, right? So it's like we begin to solve a little bit of the smoking conundrum, only to have the new and novel products, you know, basically blowing us out of the water. And so we need to recognize that we're playing a game of whack-a-mole and, you know, work collectively to solve that. So thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.